You are about to witness history in the making. Despite the world's highest living standards, the average American remained vaguely discontent, aware that his goal of a better way of life had still not been fully realized. There was something missing.
There's this awful gap in our lives just because we don't have... Oh, but why talk about it?
It's just that... Oh, I keep hoping someone can find a way to...
Don't be a fool, Mary. You know that's impossible.
Oh, I know. It's just that...
Gad, it's ironic. With all our technology and industrial know-how, we still don't have the one thing that could give us a better way of life.
It's the Forgotten Filmcast.
Her Highness has a new sweater.
Ooh, it's luscious. You've got to hand it to Sarah. She certainly has good taste.
The way she acts, you'd think nobody else did.
She'll hear you.
Welcome to episode 182 of the Forgotten Filmcast. My name is Todd Liebenau, and thanks for joining me for this look at the movies that time forgot. On this episode, I'll be joined by Jeanette Ward from The Mundane Adventures of a Fangirl to discuss a 1989 film about a group of martial artists who must learn what it takes to be a team, starring Eric Roberts, Philip Rhee, James Earl Jones, and Chris Penn, directed by Bob Radler. It's Best of the Best. But first...
At the next meeting of the Civic Association, I'm going to sell my idea, or my name isn't...
The Forgotten Filmcast.
It's intermission time, folks, so hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right over to our refreshment center for the most extravagant array of refreshment goodies ever assembled under one roof. Enjoy breathtaking, mouth-watering goodies, everything from a snack to a delicious full meal. At our refreshment center, you'll find a large variety of goodies to satisfy your hunger, your thirst, or your sweet tooth. So hurry, hurry, hurry. Visit our refreshment center now.
There are words men live by, words of strength, of wisdom, and of peace. We urge you to find the spiritual comfort and guidance we all so greatly need by attending your place of worship regularly.
Drive away your worries and cares at this drive-in theater, where you will see the finest motion pictures of all time soon to be released. Drama, comedy, adventure, excitement, something for everyone. Here's a brief glimpse of some of the truly fine pictures we've scheduled in the near future.
From the depths of space comes the strongest man on Earth in the Super Adventure Odyssey. Hercules. The incredible Lou Ferrigno is Hercules. In a battle with unearthly creatures, Hercules, the superhuman hero, with the strength of an army. Hercules facing love and the bewitching forces of evil. Hercules, the all-new adventure. Hercules, a mythic flight of the imagination. Hercules. The legend comes alive. The incredible Lou Ferrigno is Hercules. A Golan Globus production from the Canon Group.
Return to the vanished kingdoms of ancient times. Journey through a lost empire of mad wizards and barbaric passions. Behold the saga of a legendary warrior, a loving father, who has the power of a dozen armies in one sweep of his mystic blade. This is a story of honor, disgrace, vengeance, massacre, and a man who became a demon, Shogun Assassin. Once, he was the greatest of the magnificent samurai. Now, he hunts the evil lords who butchered his wife and stained his honor. One man and one child defy the most notorious masters of death on the planet. Like father, like son, meets the greatest team in the history of mass slaughter. Nothing on earth can match their infernal fury. Nothing on the screen can match this awesome spectacle of sword and sorcery. Shogun Assassin.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, showtime!
Good.
It's been a long time! Yeah!
How you doing?
How you doing?
Alexander Grady.
How are you?
Excuse me, fellas. Excuse me! Fellas, can I get...
Anybody that a member of this team or its staff? You're dismissed. Okay. Listen. My name is Frank Couzeau. To you, I'm either Coach or Mr. Couzeau. Starting tomorrow, you are mine for the next 3 months. That means no women, no alcohol, no drugs. You will eat, sleep, and shit competition. There are only two other rules. Number one, don't be late. Don't ever be late. It shows disrespect to me, to the sport, and to your teammates. Two, we expect you to function as a team. I'll say this only once. A team is not a team if you don't give a damn about one another. You are now members of the U.S. National Karate Team. You represent the United States of America. Remember that, and we will accomplish our objective. Our only objective, which is to win. Yeah.
Yeah.
One more thing. get settled in tonight. Don will escort you into town. It's your last night in 3 months. If some of you are lucky, you might even get laid. Knowing the high standards of the local females, I seriously doubt it. But that bus leaves at 1900 hours. Sharp! Gentlemen.
1900 what?
7 p.m., Pinhead.
I knew that.
Okay, our movie this time is Best of the Best from 1989. And joining me to discuss this film is Jeanette Ward from The Mundane Adventures of a Fangirl. Jeanette, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I'm super excited to talk about this movie. Oh, my goodness.
Well, I am always excited to have you back on the show. Please remind everybody about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, you can find my movie reviews over there at my website, The Mundane Adventures of a Fangirl, because my adventures are mundane, and that's the way I like it. That's at jwardadventures.blogspot.com. I'm a little behind because, you know, life. But I just posted my John Wick 4 review, and I'm going to keep doing that, you know, as I get to it. And that's where you can find my movie reviews. Aside from that, you can kind of follow me on all the socials. I've really been cutting back on Twitter just because, you know, Twitter right now. but I'm all over the Instagram and still on the Facebooks because they are connected. So it, me being as, you know, tech savvy as I am, I can post on the Instagram and it goes automatically over there to the Facebook, and man, do I like that. So you can
amazing
find me, you can find technology me on the Instagram.
Well, I mean, you know, you shouldn't talk down about yourself there that you're just getting to John Wick 4, because I haven't seen it yet. You're doing way better than me, though. I have been to the theater twice in the last month, which is a major achievement for me. I saw Super Mario Brothers,
nice,
of course, and I saw yesterday, I actually went to the theater and I saw Air, which I really liked as well. So, yeah.
Nice.
To me, that is good. So, yeah.
Getting there. Listen, but, you know how it is. Sometimes you have to adult, and that takes precedence.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, you know, I've been adulting as a, not just adult, but parent for a darn near close, well, what is it, 24 years almost now. And once kids enter the picture, I mean, the visits to the theater are few and far between, mm-hmm, except mm-hmm for, you know, back when you used to take them to the kid movies. I always joke with people, you know, about how one summer I did not get to go and see the latest Indiana Jones film in the theater, but I did see High School Musical 3. So, you know.
Hey, and both have their virtues.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, and of course, we've got an Indiana Jones movie now coming out. And that's,
I mean, who could have predicted?
One of the things I was going to ask you, because, you are one of those folks that I get jealous of from time to time, because I see you visiting the theater far more than I do.
Hashtag child-free by choice.
You know, so, I mean, with us right here on the precipice of the summer movie season,
yes,
what are you excited about here moving into summer 2023?
I'm not going to lie to you. I did just buy tickets to GOTG3, so I've got two of those in hand. I like to see the big Marvel movies Thursday so that I'm, you know, there with all of the people who are very serious about them, because I'm very serious about them. So I like to see them Thursday night, and then I like to see them again Friday to kind of let, because that initial, I find with me, movies I'm super excited about, the initial viewing is usually bears the weight of expectations, and sometimes they benefit from going to see it again and not going in with that baggage. So I try to schedule like two of those in advance. So I'm seeing that Thursday night and Friday night. Very excited about that. One is in 3D because, of course, you know, you gotta, if they're gonna bother make it in 3D, I will go and see it in 3D. But this summer, I am very excited about Fast and the Furious 10, or whatever they're calling it. Fast X? Furious X? Whatever it's going to be called. Very excited about that. I think it's going to be great. And end of this year, the Marvels. Oh my goodness. Cannot wait for that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, honestly, whatever else comes out, I love a big summer blockbuster. Please have an outrageously huge budget. But here's the key. I want to see every single penny on the screen. Don't have a giant budget where all of it went to your star's paychecks. That does nothing for me. I want to see all of the effects, all of the explosions, all of the action sequences. I want to see all of that on the screen. Spend the money there. That's what I want to see.
I was thinking just here in the last few days that for the first time in several years, I think it actually feels like a regular summer movie season. You know,
I mean, there's
these last couple of years, I mean, we've had some, but it's just been
hesitant.
Not quite at the level, you know, there's just not been as many coming out. But this year I look at it and I go, oh, maybe I want to get that AMC pass this year, you know, because there's just so much coming out.
The not called Beast Wars, but basically Beast Wars Transformers movie. And the, yeah, like you mentioned, the next Indiana Jones, which the last one burned me so hard. And I'm trying not to get excited about this one, but it's looking good.
Yeah, you know, de-aged Harrison Ford, you know, you got to check that out for
sure.
Well,
you know, there's going to be a lot of options, and I'm excited about that.
Well, and of course, the weirdest thing for me, you know, being someone who, again, my kids are adults now, you know, it's not like my daughter is going to drag me to the movie theater, but I desperately want to see Barbie. You know?
Oh, my God, yeah. It looks like it's going to be very charming and very fun.
I mean, just there's so much going on that you can get excited about this summer. So, yeah, I'm ready for it for sure. Now, I got to ask you because, you know, we've been working on scheduling this episode for a little while. You
yes.
had some other things in the way and that was fine and all that. But as a friend on Twitter, I see you post your pictures and stuff. And I know that your conflict, shall we call it, you know, was a trip that involved a visit to Star Wars Celebration. So
absolutely.
I have to get
absolutely.
A trip report. I have to hear about Star Wars Celebration.
Well, I got to tell you, it's so interesting, right? Because I accidentally ended up at Star Wars Celebration in, I believe, 2007 or 8. And I say accidentally because I was in Los Angeles visiting my brother. And I was taking the train from his place down to someplace else to visit some other friends. And I was on the train and three Jedi got on. And I was like, well, I don't know what's happening here, but I'm just going to follow these dudes. And they got off at the... right by the Staples Center, which is where the old LA Convention Center was. And I walked up to Star Wars Celebration as it was beginning. And that day, they had a guy dressed as Boba Fett in a full jetpack who took off down the street. They were using the 501st in full stormtrooper outfits to line the street, keep fans under control. This Boba Fett dude took off, flew over the crowd, and then landed, like, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 feet away. It was incredible. No one had ever seen anything like it. The crowd went crazy. I was like, I don't know what's happening here, but this is the best thing I've ever seen. And so ended up, like, at that point, walking in, buying tickets. My brother and I came back later, wandered around. It was incredible. And since then, been trying to go to set. At that time, it was still kind of a, like, oh, kind of a niche thing. And, oh, you know, it's a bunch of Star Wars fans getting together. It was kind of fan run. Since then, with the transition of Lucasfilm to Disney and the new films and the new shows and all the stuff where we, and again, my goodness, the days we're living in where we have new Star Wars content that is coming out consistently, Star Wars Celebration has become huge. And it started as a fan run event, still very fan oriented, but it is way more tied in with the industry in that now at this convention, you get a lot of big announcements and interviews and panels and things like that. So I go whenever it's convenient. My brother still lives in Los Angeles. So anytime it's in LA or in Anaheim, I will go there. I've been to it here in Chicago. I live in Milwaukee, but you know, that's an hour and a half drive for me. So I'll go to Chicago. Mm-hmm. Last year it was in Anaheim. So I tied it in. I visit my brother once a year, tied it into a trip to visit him, went to the convention. As we were leaving the convention, the last day they always announce where it's going to be next year or, you know, whenever it's going to happen. They try to do it domestic, abroad, so they kind of alternate back and forth.
Right.
So I was expecting it to be abroad, and they announced it was going to be in London. And so I get back home from Los Angeles, and my mother called, and, you know, she was checking in because she had watched my cat while I was gone, and she goes, did you hear where it's going to be next year? I was like, yeah, it's going to be in London. She goes, well, we've been trying to plan a family trip to London. And I said, well, I will see if I can get us tickets. So I went online immediately and got us 4 tickets. I just bought Friday day passes, but we tied our family trip to London in with seeing Star Wars Celebration. So we went, and incredible.
Fantastic.
So much fun. I mean, if you're into Star Wars even at all, a convention filled with people who all are passionate about this thing, that if you are of a certain age like me, you were often picked on when you were a child. And for me, it was like Star Wars is for girls, and then layer on that, Star Wars is for black girls. And when you have all of that, and now to get to a point where you can go to this convention and it is for everyone, I cannot tell you how validating that is. It is so rewarding to go to these conventions and to be there with fans who are happy about it. And I think especially the last couple of years, there's been a lot of, sorry, this is becoming a long conversation. Forgive me.
It's okay.
This idea of the toxic fandom where you hear like, oh, the fans of this are toxic. And you have to remember they're not. They're not. What you are hearing from is a very small group of morons who are incredibly loud. And the problem is that they can taint the experience for a lot of people. And Star Wars has seen this. A lot of genre-based entertainment has seen this. When you go to these conventions, there's not a trace of that there. Even if it's, you know, they're talking about this or that, or it's a, something on a, you know, where generally it's kind of felt like, nah, people didn't really like that. The reality is someone loved it. Whatever it is, someone loved it. And they're happy to be there, and they're happy to see people from this thing that they loved. So it's, if you've never been to a con of any kind, I strongly recommend it. Pick one that's going to cover something you like and go. It's really fun. We got to see, I saw a panel on production design of all the movies that have been made in London, which most of the Star Wars have done some bits in London. So that was fascinating. We got to see interviews with Diego Luna and Katie Sackhoff, which was fantastic for my family because my whole family really loved Andor. For me, being my favorite part of Star Wars is the politics. So Andor was a show that was right up my alley, and man, to get to see him interviewed was fantastic. And Katie Sackhoff has been incredible since Battlestar Galactica, and to see her like take a character like Bo-Katan, who she played in the animated series and now is getting to play live action, and she is a genuine fan. It's amazing to get to see her interviewed as well. And then just to kind of wander around the floor and see all the there was a full-size AT-ST, like two of them. There was a Tauntaun. It was great. And they had droid races and amazing.
Sounds wonderful.
So much.
I mean, you were talking about the humble beginnings of Star Wars Celebration, and I am still kicking myself that I didn't make the effort to go to the first one, which was here in Denver.
Oh, wow.
It was actually, they held it in an old airplane hangar on the grounds of what was Lowry Air Force Base here in Denver. And in the years since, that area has been redeveloped. The hangar is still there. In fact, I was just there a few weeks ago because now it's this aviation museum.
Oh, cool.
And they still have in there an X-Wing that they had as part of the first Star Wars Celebration. And it's been signed by, you know, Anthony Daniels and Peter Mayhew and Harrison Ford and all these different people that have been a part of the different events and such. But I'm like, I was such an idiot that back in, I think it was like 98 or so, it was before Phantom Menace came out,
sure,
that I did not make the effort to go to this thing that was right in my backyard. And now it's, you know, one of the biggest things in the world. So,
it was so last year when we went, it was before Kenobi had come out. And so it was the first time Ewan McGregor had come to one of these. Hayden Christensen will occasionally go and do signings and whatever, but it was the first time Ewan McGregor had been at a celebration. And I think, and he has even said he felt some trepidation because the general consensus was that the prequels were good. And he said he was shocked by, he came, the outpouring of love. Because what happened is that really the prequels were made for kids at that time. And those kids are now, what, 20 years old?
Exactly.
And they love it. And so for him, like, he went back this year, had an amazing time, and they did a panel, kind of a like, let's talk about Kenobi now that it's aired and we can talk about all the stuff. And so that was super fun to see too. But this, the ability for some of the actors who maybe don't know how profoundly what they make affects people, to get in front of those people and be showered with the love and respect that they deserve, I think is some of the best parts of it. And then, yeah, the announcements this year of this new show that I'm excited about. Oh boy, I think it's called The Acolyte. That one's going to be really exciting. I don't even know when it's going to come out. I think later this year. And then a lot of stuff from the upcoming Ahsoka show, which is going to be phenomenal. So, I highly recommend it.
It's a good time to be a Star Wars fan.
Amen.
Well, let's get on to this movie, which has absolutely nothing to do with Star Wars, but that's okay. So this is Best of the Best from 1989. It's directed by a guy named Bob Radler, who most of his filmography is basically this film, one of its sequels, and then a couple of the films in the Substitute series starring Treat Williams.
And an awful lot of Power Rangers episodes, which I gotta say... The years I was watching, he did a lot of them.
Now, probably the more important name here behind the camera is one that's actually also in front of the camera, and that is Philip Ree, who is a notable martial artist, and he basically produced and co-wrote this film, and he is essentially the second lead of the film. Actually, depending on how you look at the film, he's the lead character, but we'll get to that, I'm sure. So this film, it focuses on a group of youngish martial artists who are summoned to a competition where they are going to be trying out for the United States karate team. Now, it's not the Olympic team, it's just the United States karate team, whatever that means. It's all a little vague when the movie starts. So among the people that are taking part in this competition, we have a widower, single father who works in an auto factory. His name is Alexander Grady. He's played by Eric Roberts. We also have then a martial arts instructor from California named Tommy Lee. Yes, Tommy Lee. not that Tommy Lee, but he is played by the previously mentioned Philip Ree. Then we also have a hot-headed, slightly racist guy with a cowboy hat and a boombox. I suppose. His name's Travis Brickley. He's played by Chris Penn. And, we've got a couple of other guys, too. There's like the stereotypical Italian guy. He's from Detroit. And then there's this kind of lanky guy who's into Buddhism and meditation and stuff. And these five guys, they're all trying out for this thing. And they get accepted. They're going to be trained by Coach Frank Cuzzo, played by James Earl Jones. And they're going to be training for this big showdown against Team Korea. Now, strangely, these are the South Koreans. The South Koreans are the bad guys here.
Well, they're the adversaries. I don't know that anyone's really a bad guy. this movie, and it's if you... First of all, let me ask you this. Had you seen this before, right? When I suggested this movie, you were not like... No, I've never heard of this.
No, I actually did see this a little over a year ago. And so I was kind of, when you mentioned it, I said, yeah, that'll work. Because the thing is, I remember being, going, well, it's not the greatest movie, but it's entertaining. I'll give it that.
I feel like this, I love this movie and had basically forgotten about how much I'd love this movie, which is why I think it fits in the forgotten film category. But I loved this movie. This is one of those where as soon as I got my own Blockbuster card, I would go and rent over and over again and just like watch the VCR tape repeatedly. And my friend and I, like, and going back and watching it now, like, I haven't seen it in several years. Rewatching it, there are so many phrases and words in this movie that I now realize I say all the time, and I'm quoting this movie. And none of them have anything to do with anything. It's what you might call urban. I say that all the time. Couldn't remember what it was from. It's from this movie. It's so great. It's so cheesy. It's so late 80s. It's spectacular. It's also the reason that for many years I did not understand what the deal was with Julia Roberts. And I was just like, you mean Eric's sister? Like that was all I thought of her as for years, because this movie was so in my brain that I could not get what the deal was. I was like, she just looks exactly like her brother. I don't get it.
You are truly unique in that regard, because obviously, Julia Roberts, a far bigger star than Eric Roberts has ever been. But one of the struggles that I had you know, with this movie, both times I've watched it, is kind of the mold they're trying to put Eric Roberts in, which to me just doesn't fit what I know about Eric Roberts.
It isn't that interesting, right? If you're only familiar with recent Eric Roberts, this movie makes no sense.
Well, it's not just recent Eric Roberts, though, because I think for me, and I think for a lot of people, one of the big challenges that they have with him is they associate him with what I think is arguably his best performance. No, that's something different. But yeah, no, I'm thinking about Star 80, it's a great performance as one of the absolute scummiest people to ever walk the face of the earth. Mm-hmm. And I think Eric Roberts has always had a hard time escaping that. And so to see him in this film where, I mean, right from frame one, they're propping him up as, oh, he's just an hardworking, all-American,
everyman,
single dad.
Who's also great at karate.
Yeah, we're going to teach our kid to ride the bike without the training wheels, and he's also a karate expert, you know, and I don't expect to see Eric Roberts, you know, teaching a kid to ride a bike type of thing.
It's,
you know,
so fascinating, right? Because I had seen this, I saw this before I saw him in really anything else. And so for me, this is Eric Roberts, which is crazy because when you get a hold of Star 80, or really, he excels at playing slimy villains. Like, that's what he does best. Mm-hmm. So this is really kind of unique.
Yeah. I guess the thing is, I don't know how well I say he sells it, really, because the whole time I mean, is it bad that I watch like the scene where he's helping the kid ride the bike and I'm going, maybe you shouldn't be around kids. You know?
Come on now. He's very, and the sweater that he's sporting, you know, that's a very, very glamorous sweater, and his hair is perfectly 80s, like feathered and just, yeah, is your regular everyday working in a factory in Portland? Because,
yeah, do they have that many car factories in Portland? I don't know. I wasn't aware that was a thing there.
Yeah. Right? Why wasn't that Sonny's job? Sonny was the one from Detroit.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I was like, he's supposed to be from Detroit, but no, he's not the guy that works in the car factory. It's an odd mix of characters.
It is,
in general. And see, one of the things, people that listen to the show, they probably think I sound like a broken record here, because I'm always talking about how I really do enjoy movies where you get a bunch of oddball characters and throw them together for some greater purpose or whatever, you know, whether that's the Goonies or Police Academy or whatever. I just like seeing a bunch of characters brought together and doing something cool. And you certainly get that in here, but this is a really odd bunch.
And you get just enough backstory on, really the most you get on is Alex and Tommy, Eric Roberts and Philip Reeve. We get the most backstory on them because they're the two leads. The others, you get just enough that you know who they are, where they're from, and what their deal is.
I mean, that was a frustration for me a bit, because I was like, there are nuggets here that I want to see more done with. I mean, like, I actually, in some ways, found myself more drawn to the two guys that are kind of the, you know, they're the Professor and Marianne of the bunch here.
Virgil and Sonny?
Yeah. Remember when the Gilligan's Island theme song didn't even mention the Professor and Marianne? That just said, and the rest? Well, these guys are the rest, you know. And it's like, one's an Italian guy from Detroit. And there's one moment where we see he likes classical music. And
yeah,
it's like,
he's
all right.
Italian opera. Yep.
Yeah.
That's all the character development you need from him. And then, of course, as with every classic action movie from the 80s, the rest of your character development comes throughout a bar fight.
Yeah, exactly. And the other guy, too. I mean, I think I liked that you have this, I mean, for lack of a better word, somewhat geeky guy that is supposed to be a martial arts expert. I was like, that's kind of cool.
His name is Virgil.
You know, they're sitting there in all their karate garb and stuff, and he's got glasses on, which, you know, I'm not slamming. I've worn glasses all my life, but I'm thinking, do you wear those when you fight? I mean, how many pairs of glasses do you go through in a year and things like that? But, well, and of course, we're jumping over the big third one here, which is Chris Penn.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, I mean, it's...
okay, so look, Chris Penn is great in this, in that he understands the assignment and does it very well. That character is awful. No one likes him. He's terrible. But Chris Penn does a great job doing that. Do you buy him as a karate expert? No. That's the role he's playing. And what I love about this is, like, you mentioned, okay, yeah, we're recruiting 5 members for the American karate team to go and face the South Koreans in a tournament that is held every 3 years. No other teams are there. It's just America and Korea.
Right.
There doesn't seem to be anyone else invited. Like you said, it's not the Olympics. It's not any other championship that we've ever heard of. But we meet these 5 guys in what seems to be the American trials. So there's a lot of fighters attending. There seems to be an entire audience for this one random, small, every 3-year tournament. But whatever, you know, that's fine. And then to get to the fact, okay, so yeah, you have to get past, okay, Chris Penn's going to be one of the top 5 karate guys in our country. Sure. but then also, James Earl Jones is coaching this team. James Earl Jones is the best karate coach we have in the United States. And I'm not going to argue with it because, man, does he sell it.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because, I mean, I feel like they're trying to turn James Earl Jones into like a tough love Mr. Miyagi in some ways, you know, and I mean, he doesn't really fit. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love James Earl Jones. You know, anytime he's pops up in something, I'm like, hey, I want to see it, but he's not, I mean, let's put it this way. We never see James Earl Jones doing any martial arts. Okay.
No, he's just a coach.
He's a coach. He wears a suit. He's got a clipboard. You know, that's James Earl Jones.
It does kind of give the effect where I would love to see a behind the scenes special of this movie because it almost feels like he could have shot all of his scenes in what, like a week, maybe 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I love it. The other thing that I quote all the time is once we pick our 5 guys, we got them in the, you know, the locker room ready to go. The 2 rules, the one rule, don't be late. Don't ever be late. It said in James Earl Jones's voice. Like I say that all the time. And then the second one, which of course is basically the tagline for this movie. A team is not a team if you don't give a damn about one another. Like that sums up the entire plot. It sums up, and it's incredibly cheesy, but when it's delivered by James Earl Jones with all the weight he's putting behind it, you're like, oh my God, I'm in. I buy this. I'm all in.
And,
how will this group learn to get along so that they can truly become a team?
And I guess the big question is, do they? Because,
yes.
Well, they do for convenience sake, you know, by the time we reach the third act. But
well, yes, the bar fight is step one, right? Because they go to the bar as 5 separate dudes, and then they come together. Chris Penn's Travis picks a fight with a local. Well, I don't know if he picks a fight or just responds to the fight. And then they all have to jump into the fight.
A local, by the way, we should say, who is played by Kane Hodder, yes. Famous for playing Jason Voorhees several times.
Who apparently is in a lot of the best of the best movies. Oh, by the way, there's 4 of these.
Yes, yes.
And is in each of them as different people.
Yeah, yeah. The bar fight scene, I mean, I gotta admit, it's maybe my favorite moment of the movie.
Absolutely.
You know, perhaps with the I like the competition at the end. I think there's some good stuff going on there. But I mean, who doesn't love a good 80s bar fight, right?
It was required in every 80s action movie to have a quality bar fight.
And this is one that just goes all out. And it is kind of fun the way that, like you say, we have the 5 guys and they're all kind of, you know, for the most part, doing their own thing in there. And then, you know, they do kind of come together for the bar fight. Now, I don't know if that's because it's the beginnings of the team building or if it's because they're just like, well, hey, it's a bar fight and we're karate experts, you know.
That's right. Well, the purpose of any bar fight in any 80s action movie was twofold. One, if it was a buddy cop, buddy action movie, it was for bonding, team bonding, which it does here. And also to show the skill of your lead in a casual setting. So here we see, oh yeah, these guys are all legit karate guys. Okay, sure. But, you know, that's what you're supposed to glean from this bar fight.
Well, and that brings up the question as to who is the lead of this movie.
Excellent point, yes.
I think that's up for debate because the movie really kind of throws a curveball to the audience where it really begins focusing on Eric Roberts, and you assume this is Eric Roberts' movie because he's the biggest name in the movie and he's first listed. And, you know, as it starts, it's all about, here's this guy and he's working in the factory and he's got his son and all that stuff. And we've got his drama, you know, there's, you know, there's different things going on. But then as the movie goes on, we're gradually giving more attention to the drama of Tommy Lee here.
Yes.
I can't say the name without laughing a little bit.
Well, and it's awfully close to Philip Ree, isn't it? Like,
it is.
We just use Philip Ree and just call him that.
But it's not like Tommy Lee from Motley Crue wasn't a thing at this point. This is 89.
That's the crazy thing. And we know that Philip Ree wrote this, so he must have chosen that name. Whatever. But yeah, that it becomes essentially a two-hander. Like, you have two leads, both, and as it, like you just said, it begins as an Eric Roberts movie and it finishes as a Philip Ree movie with a strong supporting from Eric Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that Tommy Lee's storyline is probably a little more compelling. I think that because as we learn, you know, he's got some stuff in his past, and so entering this tournament is going to help give him closure, whereas Eric Roberts is, he used to be good at this, but then he had a shoulder injury, and so now he needs one last moment to really reclaim his. They all have stuff.
Yeah, no, this team has a lot of issues, lot of issues. But I agree with you. I think that the Tommy Lee story is more interesting. I mean, you used the word cheesy earlier on, and I think you could say that about many different aspects of this film. And, you know, we don't shy away from the spoilers here. I mean, basically the deal going on is that Tommy Lee had a brother who was killed, during a competition like this. As a matter of fact, by the top fighter for the Korean team who they're going to be facing and all that. And add into the mix that James Earl Jones was the coach for the brother as well.
He also has his own baggage.
He's got his own guilt about that whole thing. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, I mean, avenging the brother and all that. I mean, we've seen it in a million other martial arts films. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's fine here. It's a little goofy. It was really weird for me when I realized the guy that plays the Korean fighter who killed the brother is actually
Ree?
Philip Ree's brother, Simon
Ree.
Yeah.
Simon Ree, who plays one of the Unisols in Universal Soldier.
Oh.
There you
go. Of course.
That's something you forget about. Did you count the training montages in this movie?
Oh, I didn't count them, but it's multiple.
There were at least three.
And when you were saying, you know, I mean, every 80s action movie had to have a bar fight. Well, you also have to have training montages.
Yeah.
And yeah, these are, I mean, this is 89. So this is sending the 80s out with a bang when it comes to training montages.
Yeah, we're going to hit them hard. We're going to get a lot of them in. They bring in Sally Kirkland, who plays Coach Wade, basically another trainer. So you've got James Earl Jones, you've got Coach Don, who is the trainer who's reviewing all the film, and then you bring in Coach Wade, and she's there to help train their minds. So she gives them meditation and yoga and, you know, helps keep them centered because the Koreans are doing that. But then there's a training montage where they have started by running 5 miles, and she's working on some yoga and whatnot. Then the next training montage starts intercutting. Coach Kuzo hands out the assignments. Okay, you're fighting this guy. You're fighting this guy. You're fighting this guy. You're fighting that. And they each get a brief. So you kind of get an introduction to each of the five Korean fighters as well when they're handed these documents, and they play a little clip of them doing something incredible, like breaking a brick or smashing a tree or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you start to intercut the training montages with what the Koreans are training and then how the Americans are training. And you start to see the Americans improve over time. A training montage is great because it can do a lot of storytelling in a short amount of time, layered under a fantastic power ballad, in this case, a song called Best of the Best, which I can only assume was written for this movie.
Why not? Yeah.
Shazam refused to find it, so I can't tell you who it's by.
And the thing about the training montages that have the Koreans in it, I actually found the Korean side of it more interesting, which, you know, it's strange. But
why are they running through snow? And what's up with standing in that waterfall? wonderful. And why are they hitting trees with their hands?
Exactly. They're like running up a mountain covered with snow and they're fighting trees and things like that. And I was like, this is actually like Rocky Four, but in reverse, you know,
Rocky
because
Four. They got a copy of Rocky Four over there and they figured, well, this is how we have to train to beat Americans.
Yeah, I guess so. Because I mean, in that one, you have Rocky climbing a mountain and being out in the wilderness and all that, because it's supposed to show that American spirit, I guess, and that he's using unconventional, you know, methods and all that.
Right, while the money he had didn't compare to the money that the Soviets were dumping into Drago.
Drago's got all the fancy equipment and all that.
Storytelling layered into a montage.
And here it's reversed because you got the Koreans out there, you know, chopping down trees and stuff, and the Americans are all in the gym. I was like, clearly you watched Rocky IV, but I don't know if you got the point there.
those training montages cracking me up. And the one where the Koreans are jogging in slow motion and Simon Rhee and James Liu, who was in Big Trouble in Little China, are completely in sync, like step by step. And then the other three are not. And I was like, did only two of them realize they probably should have been exactly in sync when doing this?
Well, I want to jump back to, you know, you brought up Sally Kirkland. Mm-hmm. And I mean, as I was watching this movie, there were many things that I thought, well, clearly this is coming from this other movie. I mean, we just talked about Rocky IV, and there's elements of this that I could pull from Enter the Dragon, that I could pull from The Karate Kid. Sure. And when Sally Kirkland shows up, I was like, are they going for a Top Gun Kelly McGillis type of thing here?
But
I mean, it doesn't turn into a romantic subplot for anybody, but still I got the impression that maybe there was supposed to be one and it was, you know, put on the cutting room floor, or I don't know.
I'm really glad there wasn't. It wouldn't have made any sense for what they're trying to accomplish. And because one of the rules is when James Earl Jones pulls him in and says, okay, you can go out tonight, because after this, no women, no alcohol, no drugs for the next 3 months. So, you know, even if she's there for that, she can't be there for that. Now, which is an 80s movie. I know it's a tough thing to avoid, having a cheesy romantic lead.
Now, I should mention here too, since we mentioned some other supporting cast members, there are some other people here that are notable. You know, we mentioned Kane Hodder shows up. I like John P. Ryan is in here. He's got a small part. He's a character actor that has been in a lot of things that I enjoy. So it was nice to see him.
But he's a guy that I always think of, and I've never seen any of the Delta Force movies all the way through, so I couldn't even tell you which one. But I swear it's one of those where he bursts into a room and tells everyone in the room, "The president just called." I don't remember which one. But that's every time I see him, that's what I think of. He's the president just called guy.
I always remember him from the first film we ever covered on this podcast many years ago, 3 o'clock High, one of my all-time 80s favorites. He's like the vice principal or something like that. But the strangest member of the cast here, we have an Oscar-winning actress in this movie, Louise Fletcher, who, of course, won an Oscar for One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, plays Eric Roberts' mom.
Yes.
And, you know, it's just in a few scenes. She's basically
she has,
at the beginning.
Maybe three lines?
Yeah. You know, it's the standard stuff. It's the, you know, I mean, trying to talk him out of it. You know, should you really be doing this? You have
your shoulder.
Your bad shoulder. What about your son?
Your bad
all that
shoulder.
Kind of thing. Yeah. You know. And then she shows up again at the end. They bring the son, who was almost in a coma just a few scenes earlier.
Well, because you have to have the drama. You have to have the drama where the team almost falls apart, and he gets that phone call like, your son was in a bike accident or car accident, hit by a car because he was on his bike, which, of course, ties it back into what the first thing we see him doing is teaching his kid to ride a bike.
Yep.
So she's
Eric
there.
Roberts is not a good teacher in that department, I guess.
But he got to have that drama, so he has to leave the team. And Coach Kuzo was like, if you leave, you can't come back. He's like, my kid is in the hospital, dude.
James Earl Jones is showing those Sith tendencies right there.
I tell you, my goodness. Know. Yeah, but she's there in the hospital. She has three scenes, one in the beginning to try and talk him out of it, two in the hospital with the kid, three at the end to celebrate him as he's fighting.
Hey, got to make a living, I guess. You know.
Hey, man, nothing wrong with that.
Before we start heading towards the break here, we should talk about the big conclusion here, the big the big fight at the end. This is where we get to see the tournament, all the you know, the big martial arts sequences and all that. I want to get your take on it. I will say I did appreciate Ahmad Rashad showing up to help me understand how the rules work.
He explains the whole movie to the audience. Thank God Ahmad Rashad is there.
And I even the parts that I didn't quite get the rules of it, I kind of filled in the blanks with my memories of how the scoring works from like the Karate Kid and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, what's your take on the big finale here, the big showdown at the end and how it all turns out?
I think it's great. There's a lot of drama and pageantry as they arrive, and the drumming, always enjoy seeing fantastic drumming. And I like that the first time you see this, you may think, is my movie skipping? Because they do kind of like fast forward through several of the fights where Virgil and Sonny, because those guys are less important. You don't need to see all their fights. You know, they lose. They come close. They do well, but they lose. Travis, his fight ends up in a tie, so he has to break bricks against the other guy, and he loses by one brick. Okay, fine. Get that.
That was the weird thing, too. I mean, that, you know, when they have the tiebreaker being breaking cinder blocks or whatever it is. Yeah.
What are you tying him for? We can all see that he's got it. I do like that.
Totally a Chris Penn moment there. Yeah.
The fights that matter when you've got Alex's fight and Tommy's fight. And Alex, of course, because they've been telling us all movie about his bad shoulder, James Liu immediately goes for the axe kick and separates his shoulder. And then... we didn't even talk about, like, there's several scenes where Eric Roberts is acting really hard.
Oh, like, he's when he's swinging for the fences,
Angel
yes.
Jones about his kid, and he's my kid, man, I have to go. This sequence, when his shoulder gets separated and he is writhing in pain on the ground, at this point, it's big, but my goodness, it feels visceral. Like, yes, after a couple moments, you're grabbing your own shoulder like, oh my God, I can't with this. It's too. And then when he's screaming, because they're like, well, you got to stop. You got to stop. And he goes, no, I have to finish the fight. I just have to hold him off for 30 seconds so we can keep the points that I've earned. And they're telling him, no, your shoulder is separated. And he starts screaming at Tommy to pop it back in, which my friend
pop
and
me,
I
Tommy.
Used to scream that at each other. Pop it, Tommy. Tommy, pop it. Pop it! And then to see him brace, Tommy puts his feet against him, brace it, and pop the shoulder back into place. My goodness. Like, it is some big acting choices, but it is a visceral scene that pays off. And then he holds him off for 30 seconds and gets his points.
It's like he wanted to do the Cut Me Mick scene from Rocky, but he wanted to really do it bigger. Yeah.
Oh, my God. And then the final fight between Tommy and Dehan. Again, remember, Dehan's the one that killed his brother years ago in a tournament just like this one, which they remind you of repeatedly. Speaking of which, because we talk about how Eric Roberts like briefly got kicked off the team because he had to go see his son who was in a coma in the hospital. But Tommy briefly leaves because he can't handle the trauma of facing the man who killed his brother. And there's a sequence where he's riding around, you know, Alex tries to talk him back into it. The scene at the gas station where he stops and to fill up his motorcycle, because of course it's an 80s movie, he has to be moodily riding a motorcycle.
Oh yeah.
Pauses, sees a family going into their station wagon, and older brother, younger brother. Younger brother accidentally drops his ice cream cone, looks incredibly sad. Older brother hands the younger brother his ice cream cone and then tussles his hair as they get in the car. I'm not going to lie to you, every damn time, tear up watching that. Every time. It is ridiculous. It hits me in the heart every time. It was even more after, like, my brother and I are very close. We lost our youngest brother. So now, like, I remember trying to watch this too soon after losing my youngest brother. That scene destroyed me. And I'm like, I've seen this 1,000 times. I know what's going to happen. Shouldn't be every time. Today, watching it, still teared up. Ridiculous. Anyway, moving on. So he's facing off with Dehan in a final battle. And they... What I love about this, and as you mentioned, Dehan is played by Simon Rhee, who is Philip Rhee's brother. I love the fact that they had to give him an eye patch, a different haircut, and a beard so that they wouldn't look like brothers, but you could still tell, like, these dudes look, clearly these guys are related. The fight sequence here, and again, this is, and I don't know if I've said it on your show, but I say it all the time, something I learned from Wesley Snipes, which is very important. When you have an actor who is trained to do the fight, who has spent the time in learning how to do the fight, memorize the choreography, back up the camera. Let me see the entire fight choreography from a distance so I can appreciate the work they put in and I can see it. That fight, there's several long sequences of them just beautiful taekwondo, face-to-face, with a Madrasad telling us how good it is. I love that. I thought it was beautifully done.
I will say that a lot of fight sequences you watch and you go, okay, well, this is for the screen. This is a movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One of the things, I mean, in this, I mean, we've said it several times, this cheesy late 80s action film, one thing I will say is that you could feel those punches at the end of the, yeah. and the kicks at the end of this movie. I mean, it looks very believable.
Yeah, this fight in particular, and I kind of got caught up in thinking of how much fun must the Ree brothers have had in doing that final fight sequence. Like, we know Philip wrote it, we know Simon handled all the stunt coordinating, like, they must have had the best time, like, oh, let's do this, let's do this, considering they probably did that stuff from back when they were, like, 6 and 7 in their backyard, to being able to put it on screen. I love that. And that final fight is great. It is one of the great movie fights, in my opinion. Which, of course, then, you know, you have to add in the drama, like, Tommy's trying to wail this, like, this dude killed my brother, and then you get to the end, and he's got Dehan beat. And Dehan is stumbling on his feet, basically can't put it down. And it's, the point difference is 1 point, right? America's down by 1 point. All he has to do is knock him out. But he's got nothing left. He's totally defenseless, and he's standing there. And then the coaches are like, no, don't do it. Because, you know, Eric Roberts thankfully reminds us, like, oh, he's going to kill him. And so the coaches are like, Tommy, don't do it. Don't do it, Tommy. Finish with honor. And so Tommy just stands there. Time runs out. Dehan falls over. Tommy loses. Well, he wins that match, but America loses the tournament.
Right.
Which, again, this tournament, there's a lot of questions around this tournament. But when he comes off and James Earl Jones says, well, you won that match. Don't ever forget that. I think that's great as well. And then rolling that in final, like, okay, everybody gets there. Can they get medals? Like, there's only two teams here. Why are you giving... Whatever. So the Koreans get their medals, and four of them are super happy, jumping around, waving to the crowd. Dehan gets his medal, walks over to Tommy, and says, there's some beautiful writing for, again, a very cheesy movie about, you know, to save a life in defeat is to win with honor. And your brother was a very honorable fighter, and I regret your loss, and I offer myself as your brother. Come on. It's beautiful. He gives him the medal, and then they hug and embrace, and then there you go, the end of the movie. And I like that it ends right there. That's it. You get no other wrap up. It ends at the tournament.
Oh. Well, yeah, no, that's the way you got to do it in a movie like this. You know, yeah. It's, the tournament's over, and that's that. We don't need it anymore.
I love it.
Except that there was more. Before we go to the break, we should mention this, because you kind of hinted at it before. There are several sequels to this.
Oh, and yes.
I was thinking about it, Jeanette. I was going back to previous times you've been on the show. I was like, you have a knack for being on shows where we talk about a movie that has spawned several direct-to-video sequels. Because you remember we did Relentless with Judd Nelson.
That's right. And that like movie, five of those, aren't there?
Yeah, there's a bunch of sequels to that one. And just like that, this movie has three sequels. There's Best of the Best 2, and then there's Best of the Best 3, No Turning Back.
Right.
And Best of the Best 4, Without Warning.
Now, so, I know that I've seen Best of the Best 2 because it has Wayne Newton and Ralph Muller and features underground fighting in Vegas, where Wayne Newton comes out and he goes, there's only one rule. There are no rules, and you love it, yes. So that's another, like, my brother and I will say to each other, and you love it, yes.
And I think Eric Roberts is back in that one.
Yes.
Philip Ree's in all of them. Yeah.
Simon Ree shows that Dehan has a cameo in number 2, shows up to help out at the end, because remember, he offers himself as his brother here, so he shows up when they need help in that one. I cannot recall if I've seen 3 and 4, and I think I'm okay with that.
Oh, I was going to say, I mean, you're not going to do a marathon? I mean, you just did the first one. You could totally...
I mean, maybe I should. Depends on if I can find them. You know, when you used to have a Blockbuster on the corner that had all these movies easy to find, now I have to just figure out if I can stream it somewhere.
Yeah.
Luckily, I do own this one on DVD, so I was all set there.
Probably on Tubi or something like that. I'll have to look. We'll see.
Yeah. It is available on Pluto. If everyone can have Pluto, it's free.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I was looking before we got ready for the show. I was like, okay, I know I watched this a year or two ago, but it's not streaming anywhere. I'm gonna have to rent it, you know, pay to rent it on Amazon.
$3.99 on Amazon.
And then totally, I mean, as we're recording it right now, it's the 2nd of May. May 1st, it hit Pluto TV, and I got to watch it for free yesterday. Yep. So, yeah.
Fantastic.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break here. We'll hear from another Lamb Podcasting Network show, and then we'll be back with our movie recommendations here on the Forgotten Filmcast.
You'll save money and time. You'll get the best of merchandise and service when you patronize these good neighbors. Shop with them regularly for friendly service and money-saving values.
What do Raiders of the Lost Ark and the Treasure of the Sierra Madre have in common? What about Goldfinger and the Spy Who Came In from the Cold? The Blues Brothers, and Silence. There's only one way to find out, and that is to listen to Howard Kasner and Pop Art, the podcast where we find the art in pop culture and the pop culture in art. For each episode, my guest chooses a movie from pop culture, and I'll choose a film from the more art indie classic foreign side of cinema that has a connection to it. So for those who want to know about Jurassic Park and Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein, and Son of Frankenstein, tune into Pop Art on Apple iTunes, Spotify, Anchor, and other streaming platforms near you.
Hi, everybody. This is Todd. Just a quick reminder that you can now help support the Forgotten Filmcast through Patreon. For just a few little old dollars a month, you could support this show and earn access to some great bonus features in the process. Visit patreon.com/forgottenfilmcast to learn more. Okay, welcome back. It's time for our movie recommendations. This is the part of the show where each of us gets to talk a bit about another movie that we've enjoyed, something that we want everybody else to know about. It could be a forgotten film. It could be an old classic. Could be something new in the theaters or on streaming. The possibilities are endless. So, Jeanette, what is your recommendation?
Well, speaking as we were about the opportunity to get to the theaters, I made an attempt this last weekend to go to the theaters to watch Renfield. However, it was not in my theater, but you know what was? Polite Society.
Oh, I've seen the... Oh, I wanted to go see this.
I cannot recommend this enough, my goodness. You know what it reminded me of, leaving it? I felt, because I saw a year ago in theaters, last April, Everything Everywhere All at Once, before it had any kind of word of mouth or momentum. And I remember walking out of that being like, this movie is great. People need to hear about it. And I feel that way about Polite Society. Like, it's great, and people need to hear about it. It is super fun, super crazy. Not as groundbreaking as Everything Everywhere All at Once, but in that it's just, man, exactly what you need. There's a younger sister and an older sister. They are best friends. They are from a Pakistani Muslim family in London, and the younger sister dreams of being a stunt woman. That's all she wants to be. The older sister wants to be an artist, but is suffering a crisis of, I'm not good enough at this. And then throughout the course of the movie, the older sister meets a man who, of course, the parents agree, like, this is a good match for you. The younger sister starts to feel like, something's off with this guy. But then is it all in her head? Is she making it up? Does she just not want to lose her sister? Or is he a legitimate threat? And hijinks ensue. And throughout those hijinks include several big martial arts battles that... at first you're like, is this really happening or is she imagining this? No, they're legit. I think they're just great fight scenes in this story, and it is fantastic.
It looks great. Like I said, I got to the movie theater the other day. I elected to see Air, but I was really toying with seeing this one because I had caught the trailer somewhere, and I was like, oh wow, that looks great. And like what you said, I thought, I'm getting a Everything Everywhere All at Once vibe from this thing. So yeah, I definitely want to check that one out. Well, the movie that I'm going to recommend, I was thinking about the cast of Best of the Best. and trying to think, okay, is there something else I've seen with one of these folks in it that I could recommend and all that. And I kept on thinking about James Earl Jones. And I was thinking about the fact that, you know, I mean, like we said, he's the coach. We don't actually see him doing any martial arts. I mean, James Earl Jones is just not built like you expect a martial artist, you know, to be. And even when it was young James Earl Jones, he was like that, you know, and I it got me thinking about young James Earl Jones. And then suddenly I thought of a movie that is also one where it's bringing together a ragtag group of people, you know, that team together for a greater purpose. And in this case, they literally are a team because this is a sports movie. And it's got the young James Earl Jones in it. And it's from 1976. It's the Bingo Long Traveling All-Stars and Motor Kings, which,
wow.
Yeah, nice long title there.
One more time on the title.
It's the Bingo Long Traveling All-Stars and Motor Kings.
Wow. All
right. And so it's directed by John Badham, the year before he did Saturday Night Fever. But this is about a barnstorming baseball team made up of ex-Negro League players who are traveling from town to town and playing against local teams. And, you know, it's kind of the idea where it's not just, you know, having a game, but they are putting on a show, basically. They're like the Globetrotters of baseball. And, you know, these are all guys that have great ambitions. And, you know, this is before we had black players in the major leagues. So they all have ambitions to make it to the majors and things like that. There's a lot of different elements to the story. It's got a great cast. Like I said, James Earl Jones is in this as one of the players. The title character, Bingo Long, who is a player manager type thing of this team, is played by the one and only Lando Calrissian himself, Billy Dee Williams. And he's fantastic in this movie. You've also got Richard Pryor as one of the prominent members of the team. And even beyond the team, you've got other great cast members, folks like Ted Ross and Mabel King in there. But like I say, and this is another case where you've got just like a unique ragtag group of people brought together. And I love stories like that. And I also love baseball history. And this is a movie that portrays a unique corner of baseball history, you know, and you know, also one of the things that's great about it is that this is literally, you know, giving us a chance to have an experience that you or I in this day and age would never have, you know, to get to kind of see the way things were, you know, during this era in history, this part of baseball and you know, just the way the world was at this time. And I'm always intrigued by that as well. It was produced by Berry Gordy. Mm-hmm. Luckily he didn't call it Berry Gordy's The Bingo Long Traveling All-Stars and Motor Kings.
You know, he wanted to.
Oh, I'm sure he wanted to, but yeah, no. Didn't happen that way. But yeah, this is one that I'm a sucker for baseball movies anyway, and this one is a lot of fun.
Awesome. Yeah, I've never heard of that. And with a cast like that, that's crazy that I've never heard of that.
Well, Jeanette, I want to thank you for being on the show. Before I let you go here, please remind everybody of where they can find you and all the things you've got going on.
Yep, absolutely. You can find my movie reviews over at jwardadventures.blogspot.com. And if you're curious about me and my belly dance troupe and where you can find us performing, feel free to visit tamarindbellydance.com. And we do have a YouTube channel. So if you're on the YouTube and you search for Tamarind Belly Dance, you'll find a bunch of our performances if you want to check those out.
Awesome. Thanks again for being on the show. And I'll be back to close things here in just a moment here on the Forgotten Film Cast.
Thanks.
Well, everybody, that's going to do it for this episode of the show. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to read more reviews of Forgotten Films, you can find them over at the Forgotten Films blog. That's at forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Forgotten Films. That's films with a Z. And you can like Forgotten Films at Facebook. I'd love to hear your questions, comments, and feedback about the show. So please email me at forgottenfilmcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to visit our Patreon page, patreon.com/forgottenfilmcast, where you can learn more about how you can help support this show. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, go watch some old movies.
Tommy, puppet!
Forget it, Alex. It's over.
Do it! Do it! Do it!
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.